I think that if you are not on social media, you are behind, you're losing sales, you're losing exposure, brand awareness, all that sort of stuff. And that's like not a negotiable thing.
Emmy, welcome to the show. How are you?
So much for having me. It's so nice to meet you.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me, you know, today. It's a quite niche and unique, right, episode, because you do offer something that is quite unique. So I'm very interested to know more about, you know, the business. But before doing that, let's start, you know, with the basics. Like, you know, who is Emmy? And instead of just like, you know, telling about, you know, yourself, usually we use this thing called the map. So, you know, it's the mission. So what do you aim to achieve, right? Any achievements that you are really proud of, either personally or professionally. And the last one is the purpose. So why do you do what you do?
Well, the whole goal of why I started Sophisticated Spreads, which is the charcuterie board company that I own and operate in Los Angeles, is that I loved bringing people together to create conversation around food. And I think it's so important, especially in America. I feel like it's not talked about enough and people don't enjoy food in the same capacity that they do in other countries. And I noticed that charcuterie boards are really a place that people are all, they, you know, come together over, and they're literally physically coming together around a charcuterie board. But I think that it's the focal point of a lot of conversations. And so I thought that that was very important. That's kind of what I'm doing, is bringing together people over cheese and delicious paired items and whatnot. And as far as achievements go, I started the business with absolutely no experience. I knew nothing about cheese. I had never run a business. I was 18 years old and I had no idea what I was doing. And now just three and a half, like short years later, here I am. I've done like over 1,000 cheese board boxes that we've delivered. We've done 100 grazing tables. I'm now like kind of a professional when it comes to cheeses, and I've judged at the International and the World Cheese Awards twice now. And yeah, and I've delivered to a lot of celebrities, met some of my favorite like characters from different TV shows and movies and all that sort of thing, which is amazing. And in general, created a community that's all, you know, about cheese, which is amazing.
You know, first of all, being Italian myself, you know, when you talk about food and cheese, we can just have like, you know, an episode about different cheese and why they are important to know and everything. So, and also congratulations on what you built, especially at such, you know, young age. And as you said, like no experience, but sometimes not having like no business experience actually, I think, helps, because you are sometimes a bit naive, but in a good way. You start doing things and you just do it, you know, without thinking about my business plan, where I'm going to be in 3 years, and doing all like Google Sheets. You just started doing that, right? And then it went well, right? So
yes. Yeah, I definitely think that that's, especially now I'm a student at USC, so I'm studying entrepreneurship, and a lot of the stuff that they teach, it's like, oh, I never had a business plan, and I didn't know that that was a thing. And I, you know, and it was just kind of like a lot of trial and error, and like launch quickly and adapting later was kind of my like big motto.
Amazing. And yeah, I know sometimes theoretically speaking on books, there are certain things, and then you realize that actually in the real world, this type of theory doesn't really apply,
yeah,
right?
It doesn't work. Very true.
And so tell me a bit more also about, you know, the type of, you know, your journey, right? Because you started, right, you know, with your, you know, the personal brand, and then, you know, you kickstarted the business, right? And then, you know, some people document that, the journey. And, you know, some people continue with that. Some others, instead, you know, they try to change also the type of content to make always like, you know, this sort of like, you know, fresh, you know, account all the time. So in your case, what is your approach there? It is like always on promoting the food. I would try to do something different. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, so when I first started the business, all of our social media was just like basically to drive sales for the business. And so it wasn't like at the time, you know, TikTok didn't have an algorithm. Like it wasn't as big as it is now. And then Instagram Reels wasn't a thing. So it was just like static images on Instagram, which is a whole different ballgame than what we're doing now. So once we started doing video content, a lot of it was around grazing tables and cheese boards and here's how to pair this cheese and that sort of thing. And then I feel like I slowly started to expand, and TikTok definitely was where I felt like I could showcase my personality a bit more. I think that on Instagram, a lot of the people who follow us, they follow us for cheese purposes. Whereas, you know, my face and my personal brand is very associated with the TikTok. And I think that at the end of the day, I'm not trying to drive sales really anymore on TikTok. And it's just more like, here's my favorite restaurant. And now over time, it definitely has greatly evolved. So I think that it was kind of trial and error. And the fact that the reality for me was that, you know, when people started saying, like, I had 120,000 followers, I think, at the time. And so we had grown, and that was from a a few videos. It was like 1, 2, 3 videos. Each video I would get like 40K followers. And then I was like, oh, this is really easy. This is going super well. And then things kind of slowed down. And I was like, oh, I have to get creative. Like, how am I going to keep people engaged, keep putting out content? And so this was summer of 2022. So I'd had my business for almost 2 years. And I basically had done some research and people were saying, like, you need to put out 3 videos a day in order to, like, be a top creator on TikTok. So I was like, okay, I'm going to just full send, do 3 videos a day for 3 months, which is what I did. And it was, and the reality is that I couldn't make cheese board videos 3 times a day for 3 months. I'm not, you know, that would be a nightmare. So I was like, I have to get creative on what kind of videos I'm going to start to put out. So I started doing a lot of stuff that wasn't typically what I had done in the past. So I was doing videos about not only about cheese pairings, but like reviewing my grazing tables, reviewing other people's grazing tables, talking about my favorite products at grocery stores. Then I started doing like restaurant reviews. Here are the places I would visit if I was in Paris. Like, and it just kind of naturally started to evolve from there. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, yeah, I mean, on TikTok, like now I think people associate the account with me and my personality more than they do the business. Like my handle's like Emmy the Cheese Boss. So I feel like people kind of know me for that, which is interesting. But it's definitely been, I don't know, an interesting process of trying to transition from being kind of a very niche brand of cheese, then realizing I had to expand from there.
How do we go, in your case as content creator, from having these viral moments to actually creating this, like, you know, sort of long-term, right, engagement with your audience? Because many people get, you know, a little peak and they think like, oh, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to create this, and then boom, you know, big decrease, nothing happens, and they have to, you know, find something else to do. How was your approach and how it is still your approach when it comes to how to treat this virality in long-term plan?
I think that in the beginning, because it was so easy to go viral, you know, I was just kind of like, I was posting and I knew exactly what formula, because, you know, I mean, there's so many accounts now. It's like, here's the sound to use, here's what caption to put, and this is how you're going to go viral. And it's like, those sort of videos, like, yes, I would get lots of views and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, they weren't feeling any connection to me or the brand or anything like that. And so I realized that even though I would call them more like community driven posts, I think that even though they didn't perform as well, that's the people who feel an attachment to the brand. And that's where I started to create an actual community versus just a viral conversation. Because I have lots of videos that to this day, I know for a fact, if I post a video and it's of a cheese board and I'm like, you know, it's the same thing of me going like, here's the board, and then it before, and then I scroll down and then I do after. And it's, guess how much this cheese board costs? It costs $4,000. And every single time I post it, you know, it gets, you know, I don't know, maybe 1 million views or whatever. And there's 1,000 comments that are all like, I would never pay for this. This is so overpriced. And all that sort of stuff. And it's like, that's a great dialogue to have, but it's not gonna, you can't just continue posting stuff like that. So I think that I started to see the benefit in creating like community driven content. And like my idea kind of behind it. Well, actually, I had the opportunity to speak to Gary Vee, and I asked him this question about like, he is a machine when it comes to content. That man has been putting out like 8 pieces of content a day for 10 years or something. And it's like, how do you constantly innovate and create when he's in a niche of like kind of motivation and business and all that sort of stuff? And he was like, just start effing recording everything that you're doing, like all the time. And just like, his example was that he was like, I had cereal this morning and I thought about how like my cereal got soggy within 30 seconds of me pouring in the milk. And like, he was like, I made a TikTok about it, or like I made a video about it. And he was like, just start putting out stuff and stop being attached to, is this going to perform well? And I think that that's when things started to shift for me, was when I didn't have any attachment to like, I could post this and I'm not going to check it for, you know, 24 hours. And I'm going to be like, that's up. And so that sort of thing, I guess.
I'm curious, how do you engage with your community? Is it primarily on social media? Do you have any other channels? Do you do one-on-one calls? And also on top of it, I'm also interested, do you also make other revenue streams in terms of like, you know, revenues for you in addition to, for instance, like, you know, selling physical things, right? So I'm curious if you, I don't like it, do you have like courses or consultation calls, anything like that?
So it was interesting, like in the beginning, I'm not really an analytics person. So I didn't know like, oh, we have, you know, 100,000 followers, 200,000 followers. Like, how many of them are in LA? You know, because my thing is videos would go viral and we would get maybe one order, maybe two orders. Like, they do well. There's no uptick in followers or anything like that. So I think that I had to figure out how to innovate and still provide something that was tangible for the audience without having to buy a charcuterie board. And so I started running analytics, and only 3% of my following on TikTok is from Los Angeles. So that's like the only amount of people that can buy my boards. So then my first way that I added a revenue stream was that I started selling merch, which was, you know, that was for like the super fans. And I didn't sell that much of it, but it was definitely worth it. And I had like a tote bag that you could go and you could buy charcuterie items with. And then I came out with a sweatshirt that says Cheese the Day on it. And then a baseball cap too. So I had like those three different things of merch, which was a good additional revenue stream. Then from there, I did an Amazon storefront. So that was also great. And then at that point, I was monetizing on my social media page. So we had like 200, maybe 150K on TikTok, and then like 35, 40K on Instagram. So I was charging for Instagram reels, for cheese brands, and then also on TikTok. And that started to kind of like supplement and made the whole social media journey like very worth it. Like, those were all like how I, you know, increased revenue. But I think that for creating and like breeding this community where people felt a connection, I started consistently doing giveaways on the page. So I would either like ship people merch or offer like one-on-one Zoom calls where I would teach them how to make a charcuterie board. Or my most recent thing that I started doing is charcuterie consultation calls. So a lot of the people who follow me are people who want to start a charcuterie board company but have no idea how to do it, which you would think it's a very small group of people. It's actually not. There's like thousands of people who want to do this in the US. And so I do like probably 4 or 5 calls a week where I'm coaching one-on-one.
Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here for you. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth. From influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements, to managing shipping and logistics, we got you all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to direct-to-consumer brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just searching The Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
And do you have any other like tips and tricks for small business owners that either don't want to go on social media because they're like, I don't want to say against, you know, but maybe they are a bit conflicted, they don't know what to do. So first of all, like, you know, for anyone that is listening today, and again, small business owners, how would you convince them, right, to be on social media and doing, you know, either influencer marketing or content creation? And for those instead that are already experienced, what would you share that, again, you know, you learn in these past years that really worked for you and might potentially work for other small business owners, no matter the industry they're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, for me, I'm a prime example of, like, a lot of people could look at my product and say like, oh, you can only deliver in this far, so why would you spend so much time on social media? But I really do think that in this day and age, if you're not on social media, it's not like an option at this point. Like, maybe 10 years ago, you could be like, oh, I'm not going to do Instagram. But at this point, if you are specifically maybe in the United States, but everywhere, really, I think that if you are not on social media, you are behind, you're losing sales, you're losing exposure, brand awareness, all that sort of stuff. And that's like not a negotiable thing. I do think that it is an intimidating kind of industry and thing to get into. And I think it's very easy. And I sympathize with a lot of older business owners and whatnot that are like, I've been running my restaurant for 20 years. I have no idea how to do social media. That's for the kids. I'm going to leave it to them. And I understand that. I think that it can be very overwhelming, but it's very easy to kind of start off with very simple videos. You really don't have to, there's easy platforms to edit things on. And the other thing that I would say is, for me, I know that like social media is my strength, but if I were to look at this as a weakness, I think that there's a plethora of people and young generation that want to do this sort of work and they have an expertise in it without even realizing. Like, people that are my age, I think, are happy to do like an internship and they intern for a company and they run their small business social media page.
Oh yeah, I know. I said it all the time, you know, before it was a nice to have, now it's a must have. Like, you cannot not be there. And also, you know, you should dedicate the right time. And again, you know, maybe if you're not the right person, like, you know, you're the small business owner, but you don't think you're the right person to run things, as you said, you know, you can have some support at least to start, right? And then I think that once you start seeing, right, the results, you're going to be like, okay, I can invest a bit more. I can put my face on now. I'm ready, you know, and so on. Something else that I wanted to ask you also, it is that we already mentioned that before, right? So going from virality to actual sales, right? It's a challenge. Another challenge also sometimes it is to go from your established, audience on a social media and bring them somewhere else. We noticed this, you know, when back in the days, like, you know, from people that from Vine trying to go on YouTube, you know, and TikTokers also trying to go YouTube, YouTubers trying to go to TikTok and so on. But for instance, like, you know, we're on a podcast now, but you also have a podcast, right? So I was wondering how easy or challenging it is to move your existing audience, let's say from TikTok to listening to a podcast. What has been your experience so far?
I think that there's been a few challenges that I didn't really anticipate. The first just being in general, I guess I didn't really think about the fact that it wasn't going to be a direct translation. Like, I knew it wouldn't be, obviously, like, I have 400,000 followers on social media, I'm going to get 400,000 listeners. I knew that wouldn't be the case. But I thought that it would be like, you know, maybe 1% or like something like that would convert. And that's not what has happened, basically. So I definitely feel like that was just the immediate challenge, was putting out content and really understanding, like, for me, my niche is cheese, but understanding, do people actually want to listen to like 30 minutes about cheese? Like, probably not, unless they're like crazy cheese fanatics. And so they're really like looking for maybe stories or interviews and that sort of thing, which I need to like get better about doing. And then another challenge that I found was just like being a specialist in short form content and putting out TikTok videos where I tell an entire story in the span of 35 to 40 seconds. And just even like how I'm talking right now, I'm very fast paced. And that's how I've been trained to do that because I know how to work with the TikTok algorithm. And then switching that story into something that's 10 minutes long on a podcast is like a whole different beast. And so I think that the first time I ever recorded, like, I'm so glad that that's away in the archives because nobody needs to hear me. Like, I was rambling. I didn't know how to like even say, you know, ascend. Like, it was a nightmare.
But it's a good point what you raised, right? In terms of a lot of people that do short form video, when they have to do like long form, it's very challenging because, again, as you said, you're used to do something that's going to be like 10 seconds, maybe, you know, 1 minute. And now with TikTok, trying also to go a bit longer might be a bit different there, you know? But it's a good point. As I noticed that many YouTubers, now they're learning how to do short form, but they might not be that good at creating, like, say, a TikTok video because they don't know how to compress their typical vlog of 20 minutes under 1 minute, right? So that is an interesting point. And that's why I say all the time to marketers, brands, treat each medium as a different channel because the tonal voice, the narrative, the format is going to be different all the single time.
I also think that that's an interesting point. I listen to a lot of Gary Vee's podcasts, actually, and I think that like his main advice for a lot of businesses when they say like they'll come to him and they're like, I'm cross-posting on Instagram Reels, TikTok, you know, and then YouTube Shorts and all the Facebook Reels, and it's not performing well. And it's like, well, those are five different platforms that all behave completely differently. And it's like you're treating them like they're twins, but they're actually cousins, and they're like, they're not that similar. And so I think that especially with especially with podcasts and that sort of thing, it's like a whole different, I mean, obviously it's a whole different thing, but I think trying to understand and learn how to perform better is definitely
good. I like the cousin analogy. I never thought about it, but it's a good way to see that. No, you're totally right. And actually super really like last question because, you know, just popped in my mind, but it's as a content creator and as a small business owner, what would you like to see happening in social media and influencer marketing in the next 12 months? If you could change it or anything that you're either missing or something they would like to see differently.
I guess, I don't know if this is really like, for me, I'm in a very in strong niche, you know, with the whole cheese board thing and everything. So it's different. I would love to see cheese activation events, like influencer, more foodie influencer events and that sort of thing. But I do think that there's sort of like, as a somebody who consumes a lot of content, I feel like the amount of influencer events that people attend and they post about, it's just become like I'm desensitized to it in a way. I feel like we've just seen so much of it. And so I think that from the brand perspective, being more intentional with the sort of like influencer events that they're putting on, because I think that it's a waste of their time and money to just do the same sort of thing where influencers show up and they get a bag of gifting things and then they have like a meal and then that's it. I think that that's just kind of not going to be sustainable to continue doing. And I think it's a wasting money from a brand's perspective. And also just, I mean, with influencers, I think that we're so wrapped up in like using the platform to make money and that sort of thing. And like using TikTok Shop as QVC basically. And I think it would just be nice to have like take a beat and just be more authentic and real with the content and really choosing brand deals that are aligning with who the people are. Because I think there's like, you know, there's content creator burnout, but then there's also like user burnout. And I feel like that's not talked about enough, where like the people who are consuming the same content, I don't know, I think it's tiring. And it's interesting because Instagram has obviously stayed along for as long as it has. I think that the way that we use Instagram is very different though. And TikTok has something very, very unique right now where like users can spend up to 4 hours on TikTok, which is unlike any other app. So I think that they should just be smart about how they, the attention that they have right now.
Very interesting point, especially on the user side. No one ever told me about that. So it's a good one. I will definitely think about that in the next future. Amy, thank you so much for, you know, sharing all these and your story, and congratulations on your achievements, especially at such a young age.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you. And thank you for giving me the platform to share about this. It was so amazing.
Of course. This was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you next week.